I missed the countdown. Welcome back, everybody, to the Quill and Query podcast. This is episode 15. My name is Brandon Hall, and as always, I'm joined by my wonderful co-host, Ash. Ash, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you?
We'll go with well. I just finished my third or fourth cup of coffee like an hour ago, so that's the kind of day it is.
I did have a Celsius today as well, so we are on the same page.
But yeah, it's been I think 2 weeks since our last episode, so we've got some fun new topics to go over and then some exciting podcast updates as well. Some of the topics we have for today, we're going to talk a little bit about unreliable narrators, writing for anthologies, which Ash and I are both doing a little bit of right now, plot twists, and I already said this, but some podcast updates and more. So before we get into all of that, we like to tell you guys what we're reading. So Ash, what are you currently reading?
I realize I did not update this. I am paused on reading anything right now. I DNF'd an arc. And I'm kind of just taking a break from everything, just resetting, figuring out my schedule. So I am currently not in the middle of anything. What about you?
I'm actually, so kind of doing the same thing, but I'm reading some nonfiction, which I don't count for some, because I don't know how to explain it. It just doesn't count to me because I'm doing this to help with my writing, but.
Right.
I got this vocabulary builder, which I may have to DNF because it's not helping much. I know most of the words in here, so maybe that's a good thing though.
Yeah, there you go.
And then I have the anatomy of genres. It keeps glitching out here, but reading that as well, just some light nonfiction reads to help improve my writing, and I feel less pressured to read those than like the fiction series that I'm reading. For whatever reason, it's a little more relaxing, and it's a nice palate cleanser between like five or six fantasy books. So
yeah, no kidding.
But yeah, that's what I'm currently reading. Kind of just a little bit each day. Hi, Nicole. Nice to see you.
Hi, Nicole.
Okay.
Yeah, the easy palate cleanser type of wheatgrass. I like it.
Yeah, definitely. And I probably won't get much reading done over the next 2 weeks as well, because I do have some traveling that I'm going to be doing. And
exciting.
I'm going to be pretty busy. But yeah, that's what we're reading. We have also some podcast updates for you guys. So pending Ash's approval, I have created a guest form for anyone who wants to come on as a guest host or for interviews and things like that. Ash and I are still kind of working on the details of what those episodes will look like, but as soon as we get that post, or as soon as we get that form public, we will let you know. But just wanted to let you guys know that behind the scenes it's being worked on, and we should be bringing on guests probably sometime in the near future. So
yes,
very exciting.
I guess Nicole's hearing a echo. I'm gonna adjust to headphones and Nicole can let us know if that fixes anything.
It's okay.
But give me a second.
Yeah, let us know if that fixes it.
Maybe not. All right, sorry to pause this. Give me like 2 seconds to go get different ones, and then I'll be
You're
right
all
back.
Good. No problem.
Sorry.
It's okay.
All right, Nicole, let me know if this works.
Are you still getting the echo?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Yeah, I guess so. Sorry, y'all.
Oh, okay. I just saw the better message. Awesome. All right. Well, yeah, if you're joining us today, another podcast update we have for you is Ash and I have switched to doing this every second and fourth Tuesday. Sorry about the abrupt schedule change once again. We're just kind of still figuring out the best way to deliver episodes that are still engaging and interesting enough without kind of repeating ourselves in the same content week to week, because I noticed we were doing a little bit of that. And so in the interest of quality, going to space them out a little bit more. And hopefully that'll make a better show for you guys. Another update I have as well is season 2 episodes are now up on YouTube. So if you want to go watch or listen there, you can do that. Still working through if I'm going to get the season 1 episodes on there, just because of some of the quality issues that I run into. But I'll give it a shot and I will post an official update on that hopefully soon. And also, lastly, with this new recording scheduled. So we're going to be skipping August 27th and September 10th. So I believe that means we will be back on September 24th because one of those is a holiday for me and the other is a holiday for Ash. So we'll be giving us a little bit of a break there. So hopefully it gives you guys time to miss us. And then we'll be back. We have no audience questions to go over this week, but Ash, sorry, I did a lot of talking there. Is there anything you wanted to add to those podcast updates?
That is totally fine by me. I don't have anything to add.
Awesome. Well, we do actually have some indie releases to spotlight this week. So since I just went on a really long tangent, Ash, I'll switch it over to you so you can read these indie releases. Awesome.
Yeah, and apologies if I mispronounce anybody's names, because that is just bound to happen. So this week, it seems like we have, I'm going to say it's Jacques-Anne-Marie's Fall to Shadow. Do you want me to keep reading the rest for next week as well? I'm just with the new schedule.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Since I'm going to be out on the 27th and you're going to be out on the 10th, I figured we could just put all these.
Cool. Awesome. Yeah. So, yes, 8:15 this week, Jacques-Anne-Marie's Fall to Shadow. On 8:20, we have Caitlin Platt's Of Silver and Sin. 8:23, John Wesley Huff's The Master of Sheerhaven. And 8:24, Mackenzie Drew's Mistress. So all very exciting. Congrats to everybody.
Very cool. Yeah, congrats to everybody on those releases. Maybe I'll check some out while I'm traveling. Yeah. But yeah, that's our introduction. So we're ready to dive into our topics for the week. I'm gonna stop separating them because we decided a while ago that they're just blending together. So I'm gonna start with this one. I'm sure if anyone has an author account on Instagram, you've encountered this proposal. Whether you're published or not, I've learned is it can happen to you. So sometimes someone will reach out to you on Instagram offering to review your book in exchange for money, so a paid review. And a lot of authors seem to get pretty annoyed by this. I understandably so. What I think is hilarious is when they reach out to me as someone who has not published a book yet, and they say, I would love to review your book. And I'm like, well, that would be great, but it's not out yet. So thanks for outing yourself as a bot. But so yeah, most of these are going to be bots, just in case you didn't know, but I'm guessing some are legitimate. So Ash, just on this whole concept of paying for reviews, what are your thoughts on that? I imagine I know what they are.
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like, you know, you see a lot of like paid advertisements from beauty influencers on TikTok or like any other type of major influencer for like a product. Mm-hmm. And they have to disclose whether or not something is an ad. So while I personally think that they are not cool to do, you know, it's like if you're paying somebody to review your book, the expectations are going to be that because you're paying them, they're going to swing more positive, maybe when they shouldn't be.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you choose to go that route, then I would say as long as you disclose it, that's fine. But otherwise, I think it's a bad practice, only because reviews are for readers. They're not for authors, in my humble opinion. So you paying for a review seems a little disingenuous.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I think I'm in the same camp. This brought up an interesting, and I more so wanted to talk about this in the paid reviews, since we know most of those kind of come from bots. But it got me thinking about, like you've said, there's a lot of sponsored social media posts for things like beauty products. They can be for video games, movies, pretty much anything. And a lot of times it will be disclosed that it's like a paid partnership of some sort. Mm-hmm. And knowing certain people in like content creation spaces, it's not always the expectation that you're going to say only nice things. Sometimes there are no stipulations. I know from some people that I watch do YouTube videos on the gaming scene. Sometimes they will get a sponsorship that's like, you can only mention these things about said game. Other times it's just put out your honest opinion. We just want your coverage. So with that in mind, what do you think about maybe not necessarily a paid review, but like a sponsored social media post, like say an indie author sends their book for free to a bookish influencer to talk about it. It's all disclosed and all like that, all those things, but it's not really a review per se, just kind of like a sponsored post, like the ones you were talking. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it can very quickly become muddy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if both parties are agreeing to it and it's open and honest, like this is a sponsored ad, then yeah, I mean, I don't, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, a lot of indie authors are doing, or self-published authors are doing this on the side too. So it's like, oh, if I'm getting something for free / getting asked or paid to do this and getting something out of it, I think, I mean, that's kind of the nature of social media now. So I'm not 100% against it. I just think as long as everyone's being honest, which is usually where things start to go south. If you aren't like, hey, this is sponsored by so-and-so, this is my honest review, you know, even if reviews are bad, it's still, you know, here's the list of reasons why I'm reviewing it. Yeah. So that's fine. You know, if like someone on Amazon was like, or whatever, was like sending you like a Kindle holder for your bed just to try out, it's like, okay, yeah, that, I feel like that's a little less detrimental to a community or like a creator. Like PR boxes, right? Like those are kind of big, kind of falls into the same camp. And most people are honest about like, oh, I got this PR box from this author or this author's publisher. And so, yeah, as long as the transparency is there, I think it's totally fine. I tend to see if someone's like, oh, this is sponsored by somebody or something, I tend to not trust it as much, only because I do feel like there's, even if there are no stipulations, it's almost like tit for tat kind of a thing. And
yeah,
if you're reviewing, you want to feel like you're being a good reviewer so that you get more opportunities in the future. It's a very, you know, complicated in this new world of people, small creators becoming more big and getting asked to do PR marketing stuff like sponsored content. So yeah, I've never been asked. I've never been, you know, whatever. So I don't really have any firsthand experience. I just like to do my advanced copy reviews if I'm gifted them.
Yeah.
Try to be honest as I
can. Yeah, I think I agree with most of what you're saying. It can definitely, even if there's not like explicitly written stipulations on what you can say, it can definitely feel like there is, like there's an expectation and that you're gonna be super nice because it was given to you for free or something like that. So I think that's important to consider, especially if you want to pursue that as an indie author. Just make sure you're being transparent, and as much as you can, try to, you know, remove that expectation. It's not going to go away completely, but just try to understand that it's going to come off as an ad to people as well. So do your best to kind of, you know, be as genuine as possible. Because I, when I think about like PR boxes and stuff, that's definitely something I want to do in the future. I would love to send out like a themed box of goods with the book and whatnot. But I would also like it to be understood that this doesn't mean you have to like the book. Like you can say what you want. Please don't feel, and I feel like not everybody is as good. Like some people do have that expectation when they send those things out, and then like they'll blacklist people like, well, you said something bad about my book, so I'm not gonna send you another one. But I can only speak for myself when I say I won't do that. But looks like we got a comment from Nicole. I'd just be happy to get the book, paying for a review definitely feels weird. Yeah, I don't think I could ever pay someone for a review. I would just maybe like that it, the art copies, things like that, where you like provide a copy for someone, sometimes I can see, but paying for one is just strange. It's a very strange concept.
Yeah. It's interesting. I don't know actually the what happens with big authors reviewing newer authors. Like if you had G.R. Martin review a book, does that go through the, I'm assuming that goes through the publisher, and I don't know what the logistics of that are, like the monetary, like do they get a monetary compensation for their time and like feedback, you know, if you're a bigger name and you're doing that. I'd be interested to see how that goes, because I feel like at that point maybe like money or something would be exchanged, only because most big name authors are traveling, writing their next book, like doing all this stuff, so maybe the time taken out is different. But yeah, I don't know, it is interesting.
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't think about like the the shout outs you get on the covers sometimes from the bigger authors. The only time I don't even remember who it was. The only time I've ever heard a bigger author speak about like that process, it was very kind of short. They said sometimes someone will send them a book and it'll be up to them whether they want to comment on it or not. And they didn't really go into the, they didn't really go into the behind the scenes though. So I don't know if there's any money being exchanged. I'm sure in some cases, but
it is interesting. I feel like this is kind of going off topic, but you know, I do, I request ARCs on NetGalley, which actually is my resource. I didn't write it down, but it's my resource this week. On NetGalley, and what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to go to the publisher's pages and then look up the requirements for the book, like book review, and they each have different kind of requirements. And some of them are like, please do not post before 30 days before the release date. Some are 2 weeks. Some are, if it's a negative review, do this. So I feel like there's always some sort of like, you got to read the fine print of any type of review, and sponsored posts or paid posts are very similar. I feel like probably more restrictive, but even when you're just reviewing, that can be, I've seen a lot of like people on TikTok being like, I'm reviewing for the first time. Like, what do I do? And it can be hard to navigate if you're new to this space. So in this new realm of indie self-publishing, especially via TikTok, it seems like there's a big learning curve for many people.
That covers paid reviews. We have the next topic we have for today is book awards and competitions. So this one I picked because the Hugo Awards winners were just announced, so I'm actually going to go over those in just a minute. But actually, you know what, I'll go over those first, because if we dive into the topic, it's not, we're not gonna have time. Okay, so Hugo Award winners. I'm not going to list all of them. I'm just going to kind of go through the big ones here. We have Best Novel, which is Some Desperate Glory by Emily Tesh. Best Novella, which is Thornhedge by T. Kingfisher. Best Novelette, The Year Without Sunshine by Naomi Kritzer. Best Short Story, Better Living Through Algorithms by Naomi Kritzer. She's got two. And Best Graphic Story or Comic, we got Saga Volume 11. So
nice. I love Saga.
You've heard of that one?
Yeah, I read them. They're really
Very cool. I'll have to check it out. I honestly haven't heard of any of these, but they're all, you know, going to go on my list now. But
yeah, definitely. T. Kingfisher is actually, don't mean to interrupt, but T. Kingfisher is one of my, like, even though obviously she's won awards, she's like a lesser known art, author on here for some reason. And she usually writes like for older audiences, like late 20s, mid 30s, early 40s, which I find really refreshing. She does fantasy really well. So would highly recommend.
Very cool. Yeah, a lot of, I like to see in these award shows, I know some of these are bigger authors that I've just not personally read, but I like to see names that I don't know. Because it puts them on my radar. So with that said, how much do you pay attention to these award shows? Do you follow them pretty closely, or is it just kind of, because for me it's just like I don't pay too much attention to them, but when I see them, I'll usually put the books on my TBR, and then if I get to it, I get to it. But I wouldn't say I'm like waiting for the next Hugo Awards by any means. So where do you stand with these kinds of award ceremonies?
For me, I don't really actively try and like follow the awards themselves. If a book has an award sticker on it, I'm more inclined to read it or pick it up and be interested than like a book that isn't. I find like just like every type of award, like recently, it's kind of built on an interesting foundation with probably a very strange history. And so I'm always cognizant of the fact that like as we get better as a society, the awards are going to be more diverse. But for something like the Hugo Awards, I feel like it does tend to be a little bit more like white people. In the last few years, obviously not the case. But yeah, I'm always just like a little cognizant of those types of, same with the Oscars. You know, there's always debate when the Oscars comes around or the Grammys or whatever. So very similar vein. I don't actively participate. I probably should pay more attention, but I think in my brain I can only handle so much, and I struggle to write. So it's it's fun to see. It's always nice to hear, especially if it's like a book or a, you know, like saga. I'm like, oh my God, yeah, T. Kingfisher. Oh my God, yeah. It's always exciting when you see someone that you follow or like a storyline that you follow get like an award. But yeah, I'm not really I'm not having like a Hugo party kind of thing, you know what I mean? Like or an Oscar party. So
yeah. My mindset with like things like this in Worldcon, which also recently just happened, is I would love to have like the mental energy and the time to care about these things right now, but yes. I'm so focused on my writing first. Like, so I'm like, when I have something to bring to these events to some level, then I'll be more interested. But yeah, right now,
I totally agree.
My focus lies elsewhere.
Yeah.
I will say though, the Worldcon pictures all over my Instagram have me interested in possibly going next year. So we'll see. But
yeah. I felt that way about Comic-Con in San Diego. Like I've wanted to go for, well over a decade at this point. It's been like on my bucket list, and it is always cool to like see the photos and see the people that are showing up. Some authors too, like go to these big conventions, but yeah, just budget wise and focus wise. I'm like, oh, I'll do that. When we're famous authors, we will all go to all of the things.
All right. Well, moving on to our next topic. This is a fun one. So we've talked a little bit about books that influenced us growing up, but I don't think we've touched specifically on required reading during school.
That's a good topic.
So I think most of us had to read books in school, some maybe that we didn't like. But I wanted to hear from you. What are some books you did like reading in school, or were there none?
No, I was always such like a teacher's pet when it came to English class. I absolutely loved everything about English class. Not surprising. Required reading is really interesting. So Hatchet is one that for me was always, even to this day, will like come up in my mind. So that's a big one. I'm blanking on who wrote that, actually. I should probably know that. But Hatchet just sticks out in my mind. Trying to think of what else. We actually read The Hunger Games junior year, so 2011. We read Hunger Games in class. And I'd already read it, obviously. But it was really cool to see something so recent being required reading.
Yeah.
Let's see. You know, 1984, huge one. Loved reading that. Still a fan fave. And Fahrenheit 451. That was, I think those are like the main ones that I remember just being so absolutely enthralled. The class, like genuinely just all the classics I enjoyed. You know, Brave New World. But Fahrenheit 451 and Hatchet, I think, are the two in my mind that like I think about actually on the regular. Like a scene or two will pop up in my brain. Especially someone made a really cool piece of art years and years and years ago. And for those of you who don't know what Fahrenheit 451 is, it's essentially like kind of a dystopian future where books are not allowed. And book burnings occur very frequently. Mm-hmm. And the book had, when you opened it, it had a match in the beginning that you could like take out, and the spine was the striker. So you could choose to light it on fire if you wanted to. So yeah, anyway, those are my faves, required reading. I love required reading. I think it's always a pain when you're in school because you're like, I have other things to do. But
yeah,
I think for a few of those, it's a pretty essential, especially now, you know, like, yeah. Anyway, what about you? Do you have any that you liked or loved?
Yeah. I'm going to respond to Nicole's comment real quick. She says she's been a con goer since high school. They are really fun, but these days they are very overcrowded. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of crowds. So that's kind of been part of the reason I abstain from these things. But
yeah,
one day I will brave them. Yeah, so my school experience is kind of interesting because I feel like in middle school, I did not have very great experiences with like required reading and just English teachers in general. And that completely flipped in high school where I had such a good relationship with my English teacher that like I did online for high school. And we had to do these like weekly phone check-ins or whatever. And we would always go over time because we were talking about the books I was reading.
Oh,
and
that's great.
It was awesome. He was a really cool teacher. So it's hard for me to pin down like specific books, but I specifically remember the Shakespeare plays. Those were fun reads. And then The Crucible by Arthur Miller. That was also a really good one. And there was actually a nonfiction book as well. I think it was called On Writing Well by William Zinsser. I think I shouted it out in one of our weekly resources.
Yeah, you did.
That one as well. That is probably the single greatest book on writing that I've ever read. So yeah, high school really turned things around in that regard, in my opinion, on like required reading. And it was a great time, but I definitely struggled in those early middle school years with some of the books and the teachers that I had.
Yeah, I think that makes a huge difference. Nicole says, we read Pilgrim's Progress in middle school. I don't think I ever read that, actually. So funny, because she also said she didn't read any of the ones I listed. So there you go. Required reading early, you know, late in life, I guess.
I didn't get to read any of the ones that you mentioned, I don't think. But it's weird. My little sister has some, like, really cool ones in her in her few years of school. Like, she had The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings one year, which was awesome. I was like, I wish I got to read that in school. Yeah, but
seriously.
So I think they're stepping up their game a little bit with the required reading.
I'm going to call my sister. She's 11. And I'm going to ask her what she's required to read now for middle school.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Nicole said, did you do The Great Gatsby and To Kill a Mockingbird? Yes, to both of those. I liked The Great Gatsby a lot. And yeah, To Kill a Mockingbird, also very good. I don't know why mine stick out by more, but those are classics, obviously. Even if it's not required reading, should definitely be totally read. But definitely Southern school books, I think, like, now that you're mentioning it. I'm sure it's required reading for a lot of other people. But yeah, now they're probably on banned book lists everywhere. Who's to say?
S.M. Campbell, read both of those, love Mockingbird. Lukewarm on Gatsby. I do not think I read either of those.
Do you really didn't? I think you would like them. I mean, at least just to say that you read them.
There's so many classics on my TBR. And I will also fully admit, in middle school, I did just pretend to read some of the books and just do the book report. So,
yes.
Just looked up the Wikipedia, which probably wasn't the best source. But
oh my God. Spark Notes back in the day was like, yes. Yeah. On bad weeks, got me through.
Yeah. Definitely turned it around in high school. But
yeah.
Let's just say the teachers I had in middle school didn't do reading much favors. So.
Interesting. I'm so fascinated by that. But that's for another time, I guess.
Yeah. We can talk about Brandon's middle school experience on another episode.
An experience, yes.
Seth Campbell, our program was a ton of reading, 1 to 2 books a week.
That's a lot.
That is quite a bit of reading. Sounds a little exhausting, but
yeah.
I guess that maybe that's where you get some of your reading and writing speed from, because you are very fast.
Yeah, I was always in trouble for reading in class. Like, I would fly through the required reading and then just be reading. Like, especially in middle school, it'd be like Redwall or The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Like, just constant, always. So I was also an avid reader, and then that ended in college. And now I'm still finding it challenging sometimes to get into reading.
Right. That's so weird, because I also did the same thing where I would like finish. So I would do this thing where I would like do my homework during class and then get everything done. And then I would just sit there and read.
Yeah.
And then the teachers didn't like that, but I was like, what else am I supposed to do? I got everything done.
Doing it. Right. Right.
All right. Well, that's enough about books in school for today. I think we can move into our weekly work in progress check-in. I got a little bit of writing done, not a ton, just under 1,000 words written since the last episode. So I think a little under 500 a week if you average it out. So, not a ton, but not as slow as I have been either. So
that's good.
What about you, Ash?
I'm about the same. I've got little under 1,000 for A Filthy Hunger. And then I have been working heavily on the plotting for the rest of the anthology short story.
Awesome.
Feeling a little stuck. Got some good feedback from my dear writing buddy, Kate, today. She read what I had so far for A Filthy Hunger. Gave some really great feedback, which was kind of what I wanted or needed to hear and wanted to hear, but also needed to hear. So I'm trying to, I feel like I say this every week, but I'm really just, it's been a strange year writing wise. I kind of oscillate between like loving it and then hating it and a lot of self-doubt and a lot of other stuff. So yeah, anyway, it's been slow, but I have put words on paper, which is all we can ask for.
Yeah, definitely. I feel that with how the year has been writing wise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like I thrive more with writing in the fall and winter months. And I think that's just same. Because like things just slow down and it gets darker later. And I tend to enjoy that way more. It's colder. You can't go out and like hang out with friends as easily.
Yeah.
You know, so maybe that's just the natural ebb and flow of stuff. So hopefully this fall and winter we get some chapters down.
Yeah, summer also is difficult for me just because of how much work piles up in the summer and then like winds mm-hmm. down for the rest of the year. I get like yeah. so many projects in the middle of the year that I mm-hmm. wrap up in the second half.
I was gonna say, so. Yeah, work always slows in the fall and winter because of holidays too and people like traveling and, you know, family time. So yeah, we'll see. We'll do a big old check-in at the end of the year, I'm sure.
Yeah. Thankfully, I have not been measuring my yearly progress, so I'm yeah. not gonna. Gosh.
Yeah, just on average, what did you think this quarter? How are we doing? Where are we at? So yeah.
All right. Well, that covers our work in progress check-in, so we can move into our writing topics. But this one's kind of a vague topic, but I'll try to be a little more specific with the questions that I pose. But I wanted to talk a little bit about incorporating real life events and experiences into your writing, because I think everyone kind of does it a little differently. And so I'll just start with the broad question first, which is how do you use certain experiences in your life to inspire your writing without, I guess, feeling like it's like copy pasting from what you experience in life and then just putting it on paper? Like, what is that process like for you for turning that into a story or an element of a story?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I think events in my life have inspired certain things that occur in A Filthy Hunger and the short story, you know, or anything I write, really. I usually take what happened and in certain, like with Kara, my main character, a lot of what happened is infused with her, but almost as if like how I wish I had handled it. For example, she often epitomizes like the strength that I never had in certain situations, despite dealing with similar things. So I think that's what I like to do with situations in my life that do end up having some sort of inspiration with the novel, or whatever I do, right? And other times it is good to pull, like, how did you feel about the situation? How did that emotionally affect you? And kind of imbue that in a character. But to me, that they are so separate and unique and different in my mind that it's almost like, how would they handle it if I were to put them in a similar situation? I think some of it is intentional in that regard of like, how would this character handle this situation? And some situations do pop up throughout that I have experienced as well, or, you know, even people that I know have experienced. But I don't try to make that an active, like, plot point. It just naturally kind of occurs with the plot and the journey that these characters take on their own, and it just happens to parallel with things that have happened in my life. I think I avoid actively doing that a lot only because I don't want to directly take, and I want them to kind of stand and move on their own. So yeah, I hope that answered the question as succinctly as it as I could.
Yeah, it's kind of a broad question, so I kind of put you on the spot there, but okay. Yeah, no, I think that's a great answer. I like what you said about with Kara, I think, right? Your protagonist, about how you wish you had handled certain things, because I feel like I do that as well with some of my characters. Not specifically with the debut that I'm working on right now, but a lot of it is based on, or a lot of the real life, I guess, experiences that I've put into the book and let it shape the characters and the story is around things like grief, loss, emotion, and just general emotion and experiences surrounding that. And especially in regards to like family relationships. Mm-hmm. But again, I'm also like really careful not to, I never want something to feel like you can point to something in my life and say, ah, that's the part that the story came from, or that's the person that that character came from.
Right. I was going to say the exact same thing about the people. You don't want to get a strongly worded email being like, this is me and I know exactly what situation this is from. Like, sorry.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely don't want to do that with any of my characters. Yeah. I don't think I do, which is good. I know some people find that difficult, but it's never really been a problem for me because I kind of take bits and pieces of different like personalities and kind of mash them together and make my characters that way. I don't just look at one person, but I don't think I answered that nearly as eloquently as you, but that's
kind of absolutely. It is funny. I do feel like it is kind of noticeable when you are reading a book. Obviously the genre matters. If it's an autobiography, no duh. If it's loosely based off of certain events, obviously, like there's going to be a lot of inspiration pulled from it or from whatever was experienced. But sometimes I feel like recently, at least with like some of the indie self-published stuff that I've read, a lot of it unfortunately reads as self-insert.
Yeah.
Or you can tell that they are directly taking from a life experience and just kind of like putting it on paper. And I think you can do that really, really well, because sometimes there is a huge event that drastically shaped who you were and that inspires your writing, and as it should in certain cases. But I think it's got to be done with enough tact that it's not so glaringly obvious that this is like a, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It can be done poorly, unfortunately, but I think it's important to make sure that you're imbuing your characters and what they go through with enough humanity and enough realistic experience, even if it is a fantasy, let's say, that it reads believable. And oftentimes you can only write that if it comes from personal experience, or you are listening to other people who have experienced it and then trying to do that justice. So it can be hard, but it can be done really well too, I think.
Yeah, for sure. I've definitely read my fair share of bad self-inserts. some down to the point where like you're reading the description of the character and you like flip to the back and it's just the author picture.
Yes. Too many of those, I think, recently. So
yeah,
I get it. It's fun, but I'm also like, maybe you put that in fan fiction. Like maybe you know, just do that. But
sometimes it gives me a little pause, just because sometimes I feel like I'm reading someone's like very specific fantasy about something, and it's very awkward for me. So please just be careful you're trying to execute that, because it's a slippery slope and it's very hard to do well, but you can do it well. Thanks. You can't.
It's super similar, and maybe that we can bring this up in a later episode, but when people, and I think it might have been touched on last episode, but when people take a fan fiction that they have written and then it gets turned into like a romantasy or a rom-com or something like that, and you're just kind of like, especially for those who don't know, the Reylo community, the Star Wars. There have been a few like popularized books that were fan fiction that get, you know, got made into rom-coms, and it's just like obvious. You know, you're like, oh, no, like I can, like, obviously this is Kylo Ren. And anyway, it's just, no offense to those authors at all. I mean, I'm not trying to yuck your yum. It's just sometimes it is a little like, from the fan fiction. It's the same story.
It's that copy my homework, but don't make it obvious meme, right?
Yeah. Yep. 100%. Or it's like, we've got McDonald's at home, and then it's like McDonald's at home, you know. But some people love it, and I truly respect it. It's just not for me, you know. I can't be too. Obvious.
I'm sure this exists, but I would love to read one that's just so like unapologetically like that, like self-insert ripoff of something else that's like parody level. But I don't even know where I would go about finding something like that. I'm sure it exists, because there's books out there for everyone, but
I think a few years ago, I think it's longer than that at this point, but I think Rainbow Rowell did one of her books was called Fanfic, and it was about a girl in college who wrote fan fiction. And was really popular online for her fan fiction, and then how that bled into her real life. And I thought that was a great, it was cute, it was funny, it was, I loved it. So like almost satirical, because she would write stuff in her fan fiction that she would want to happen in her life, but yeah, it didn't, you know. So I think you can do it, but you just, yeah, gotta do it well.
All right, well, moving on to our next topic, let's talk a little bit about unreliable narrators. So these can be great for kind of misdirecting your reader, but they can also be challenging to write in a satisfying way. So I was wondering, since we both deal with books with multiple POVs, are there any unreliable narrators in your book, and how do you go about writing them? And also, as a follow-up to that, what do you like to see when you read an unreliable?
I don't think I have any points of view in mind that are unreliable, only because I find that to be extremely challenging. I don't know how to do that well. It is a skill set that maybe I will learn in the future, but the most realistic, like, holy cow, this is a true unreliable narrator, is Gone Girl. I was blown away by like how unreliable everyone was in that novel. I don't know how to replicate that. I have characters who are like, when they're going to get to the point where they are together and it flips chapters, so they're experiencing similar scenarios because they are in the same place and same time, I find that will be fun. To one character is going to interpret one thing one way and vice versa. That's going to be fun to explore, but I don't know how to do that to where it like leads the reader to believing one thing, but it's really not, you know? So no, unfortunately I don't have any, and I don't think I would be naturally good at it, but some people are very talented at that. Just not I. What about you? Do you have an unreliable narrator anywhere?
So I don't. I did toy with the idea of having one, since it is a murder mystery. I thought it would be kind of fitting. It's just I couldn't personally figure out how to do it in a satisfying way, at least in my opinion. And so to me, that's something that could like really destroy the reading experience if it's done poorly. And so I was like, in the interest of preserving my creative vision and the story I want to tell, and not tanking the quality with a poorly written perspective, I'm gonna not take that route. I don't think I have the skill to back that method up. When it comes to like narration, I think you could say all of my characters have like their own interpretations and biases and things like that, and so you can look at it from that lens. But as far as someone being like straight up completely unreliable, and you don't know whether they're telling you the truth or not in their even in their own thoughts, no, I don't have one of those. I also find that very difficult to write, and I can't think of many examples that do it well. I have not read Gone Girl, but I have heard that is a good one.
There's another one too, and I'm not sure if this counts as unreliable narrator only because of the plot, but it's called Going Bovine, and I'm blanking on the author, I just remember the titles, but Going Bovine, and it was like a young adult novel of a kid who gets, do you remember mad cow disease in the early 2000s? So he gets mad cow disease and then goes on this like crazy adventure, and the plot twist at the end really got me, because you're believing this whole thing, and then there is a twist at the end, and you're just kind of like, and you walk away being like, well, was it true or not? Like, maybe we'll never know. I don't want to give anything away. But it was, I think maybe that's another good example of just like the character, the main character, so very much believes what's happening is what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get your twist at the end and you're kind of like, whoa, what? Did you just like do that to me? So
yeah,
I think it can be done well. And I'm sure there are other like great examples, but that's a part of the craft that I don't think I have under my belt yet.
Yeah. I think the only one that comes to mind from like a fantasy example here for me, and I don't know if she even totally counts, but Cersei in, I think, A Feast for Crows is specifically where she's like extremely paranoid and sees everything, like from the Tyrells as an act of treason, and you're like, even when you're reading from her perspective, you're like, okay, let's chill a little bit. But
yeah, right, that's a good point. Yeah,
so I think she's done well. I like Cersei as like a villain and someone who's not quite thinking clearly all the time, but I don't know if she fits the definition 100% because she believes all of that. Like, that's how
she sees
the world.
Right, but she's also so manipulative. Yeah, yeah. So you're like, is she not? Is she making this up to make everyone think she's crazy?
Right.
Who's to say? I love to hate her. I really, really do.
Yeah, she is. She's written perfectly for that.
Yeah, she is.
All right.
That was a good question.
Did you have anything else to add on unreliable narrators before we move on?
I don't think so.
All right, moving on to writing for anthologies. So stories come in many different sizes, and it's no secret that we're both working on a debut novel and an anthology. So naturally, both of those experiences are going to be a little different. So I wanted to hear from you a little bit, since you're also working on both, it sounds like, side by side. What are some of the differences that you've noticed in writing like a short story, especially since I think you've also been published in another anthology before, right?
Yes.
And then a novel, sorry.
No, yeah. I'm really hard on myself. I feel like even though I'm new to this, I should be doing it perfectly, which I know is a lot of people feel the same way. But I often just get really hard on myself about doing this. And then I have to realize I've only written one short story for something very silly, which I loved. And then taking this on is truly like a test of newness and craft. So I want to give both of us grace here because this is new. This is new to us. We are not professionals. I did not go to school for this. So, but short stories to me, I have found truly challenging in a very different way. With A Filthy Hunger or trying to plan out a larger novel, sorry for my dog. She is being insane today.
You're
I don't
okay.
know what's going
She's
on.
She's the guest host for today.
She's just so, whatever, it's fine. Not a big deal. Yeah, so with like A Filthy Hunger or like a longer form piece of work, you are having to plot out and have a trajectory for so much, right? And especially if you have multiple points of view, adds another layer of complexity to it. So you're not just having to think like long term, but you're having to think short term. What's going to happen in this chapter that might show up again in chapter 30 or in the next novel if you plan to do more than one? So with a short story, I find it challenging because you don't have the luxury of that time. Right? With a novel, you can really expound upon certain things, such as location, or really get into world building in a way that I don't think you can do as in depth in a short story, only because of limitations. So it's been interesting going back and forth between the novel and the short story because I have to completely switch minds. I have to say so much in very little with the short story. It's something I try to do anyway in the novel because I don't want to be accused of like waxing poetic about the sun or the moon when I don't need to be doing.
Yeah.
But for a fantasy short story, you really don't have a lot of room for error. You really have to share the world that your characters are in. If you have a magic system, you know, you got to explain that without wasting time. You have to get your characters from plot point A to plot point B in like 0 to 60.
Yeah.
So it's been good because I'm working muscles that I've never worked before, but I find myself I find myself hoping that I do it well for only doing it twice now at this point. I am on the longer end of the short story. So mine's in three parts. I think we have a good balance of like really short, medium, and long in the anthology, which is great. But yeah, I'm trying to maintain everything I need to maintain in like the exact number of words, right?
Yeah.
It's like only this for part one, part two, and part three. Don't go crazy on this, but you need to go larger on this. Relationships between people have to kind of happen very quick. It's hard. It is a really big challenge. But I'm enjoying it. I'm really, especially after plotting in more detail, I'm working on the second half of part two right now. And yeah, I'm just truly, truly loving it. So, but it's hard. It's not easy.
Yeah.
What about you?
I feel it's weird because there's like, there's easy parts to both, and then there's really challenging parts to both, and they're vastly different. Like you said, one of the challenges with a short story is you have a lot less budget as far as word count goes.
Yes, that's a good word for budget.
I stole it from Seth Campbell in one of his posts earlier today. He was talking about word counts as like budgets, and I thought that was an interesting concept.
Yeah, I like that.
But yeah, dealing, because with, when it comes to A Knight of Knives, ultimately, if I want it to be longer, I can just make it longer. But a short story can only get so long before it's not a short story anymore. So that's an important consideration. And especially when you're dealing with fantasy and you're trying to like world build and explain magic at the same time as building characters. And ultimately, this has to begin and come to an end in like 20,000 words or so.
Yeah,
it can be very challenging because you don't have the luxury of spending a lot of time and kind of naturally growing these relationships and things like that. It just kind of has to all happen on a tight deadline. And
yeah,
I like that it's challenging me to kind of flex some creative muscles, like you said, that I haven't in a while. And they're both just uniquely challenging. I don't think one is necessarily easier or harder than the other. They're just both unique experiences that come with their own pros and cons.
Yeah. I don't have any good advice for people writing short stories because I'm so new to it too. I think, you know, maybe what I've been trying to do is really constrict myself on word count, budgeting rather, so that I really, you know, if I'm about to hit my word cap and I still have a long way to go, I'm immediately like, all right, what's got to get culled? Like, does this need to go? Does that need to go? And I think that's where beta readers come in, like they're perfect because they're like, hey, you don't need any of this, like take this out, we need more of this, and you know, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, when writing, it's really easy to get bogged down with the minutia. I was talking to Kate, my writing buddy, today about the novel, and you know, she made a point. She's like, the first few chapters are great and really well rounded, the last few chapters I could kind of I could feel that you were struggling, and I feel like you're just trying to, at this point, like, get words on paper rather than, like, focusing a lot on, like, a plot and how do we get from here to here.
Yeah.
And while it was so great to hear, because that's exactly what's happened, I, at this point, am just trying to make sure I'm, like, writing and getting words on paper, because editing comes later, and if I'm editing as hard as I was for the first half of what I have, like chapters 1 through 5, then this is going to take the next 6 years, right? And it's like, oh, I don't want that to happen. So I guess with this, it's the same with a short story. You know, you do have time limits and time constraints, so just get it down, and then the editing can and will always come next, and that's when you can fine tune and fix plot holes and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, that's my only advice, I guess.
Yeah, I don't have any advice, to be honest. Just try your best.
Keep on. Yeah.
I lost my train of thought. Oh, okay. You mentioned something that I related to, where you said like the first few chapters feel really strong, and then the last few feel like you're maybe less so. I don't get that feedback from beta readers, but that's feedback I have for myself when I'm reading. Oh, bye, Nicole. Thank you for joining. But yeah, that's kind of how I feel when I reread my draft. Like, wow, chapter 1 through 3 are really strong, and then chapters 4 through 6 are they're looking a little weak in comparison. So but it's nice to know that that's not just me. Like, writing quality can vary, and it's the editing that comes later that kind of brings it all together.
Yeah, it worried me for a second when I heard it. And then I was like, you know what? No, like, I'm glad it's like that obvious. Like, I'm glad that when the edited stuff comes through, it comes through as strong. And I've spent countless hours like parsing it down and perfecting it. And I'm kind of glad that you can see that there is a difference, which seems counterintuitive. But it's good to know that like when the focus and the hyper specific nitpicky stuff happens from just my end. I haven't ever put this through an editor because it's only, you know, I'm only 9 chapters in.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that it kind of seems that I'm just trying to get stuff put on paper in the latter half, because that's been the shift in mine. And I think that's okay. You know, that's good to hear to me. Yeah. I'm like, okay, good. Cause I can't focus on the nitpicky right now. I literally just have to get these chapters written, and then I can hyper focus later. And that's what the editors are for. Yeah.
For sure. All right. Well, we can move on to our last writing topic for the day. I think we're kind of right on schedule here. So the last thing I want to talk about was plot twists. So everyone loves a good plot twist. I know I certainly do. These are another thing that can be a little tricky to execute, though. I think especially for people who are newer to writing in general. So with that in mind, I'm sure we're both dealing with probably several twists in our stories. So how do you go about writing these, if you've gotten to any, or at least kind of plotting them out? And then what do you think makes a good plot twist versus kind of a disappointing one?
So I think my rule of thumb is that a book should only have a small handful of plot twists per novel. If you are plot twisting every other chapter, it's just causing your reader like whiplash, right? It can be so exciting to be like, ha, you thought one thing, but actually it's not that at all. Because you want to keep people engaged and reading, right? Like, that's what plot twists are for. They're a device to make things exciting, to draw the reader in even deeper, and to make them want to continue to the end. And that's why cliffhangers, I know some people don't like those, but I like it, because then I'm like, oh my gosh, I have to wait for the next one. Or if it's already out, I'm like buying it immediately. So at least in my mind, I only have a handful for each, kind of plotted wise. And most of these plot twists don't really start until the middle end. So I've got some that start at the middle, and then some that, you know, are in the end. Only because I feel like plot twists at the beginning, it just kind of sets a precedent that you're going to be on maybe a bumpy ride. And unless you are the type of reader who enjoys that, I feel like you can maybe lose your reader. So yeah, that's kind of like what I think I probably only really have two or three big ones. That's where I like to settle, because I want them to be impactful. I don't want them to be like, I'm just trying to trick my reader.
Yeah.
And then all the work that they have done to get to that point, I don't want them to be disappointed that they've had to work that hard. And I do think like the plot twists need to be a surprise for the characters too, which almost all the time they are, unless it is driven by one character against another. But sometimes I think in plot twists that I've read that don't have that punch or don't have that like brevity of like, hey, this is serious, it's usually because the character is like, oh, don't worry, we'll handle it. Or like, oh, no problem at all, like, we have a solution very quickly.
Yeah.
And to me, I'm like, no, I need this plot twist to really test my characters, to put them through it too. I mean, I think that's what the, you know, it's either the shock of a surprise secret or, you know, a betrayal of some sort or something like that. It needs to really, it has to weigh on the characters, in my opinion, for it to be effective.
Yeah, yeah, completely agree, especially with, you know, not kind of betraying the effort that the reader has put into figuring things out. I think it was George R. R. Martin, who I quote all the time, who was talking about plot twists specifically and saying it's very tempting to, when you think readers are going to figure it out, to kind of flip the switch and change the game. Yeah. But if you've been planting clues all along for A, if you then turn around and do B, it's not going to feel satisfying. It may be surprising, but it's not going to feel rewarding for the reader. And it's kind of going to be a betrayal of, you know, all of the time they've spent thinking about these things and the mental energy they've devoted to it. Mm-hmm. So totally agree on that point. And I also don't like it when there's too many. I think with A Knight of Knives, even though it is a murder mystery, I really only have like two or three big twists. maybe not even three, maybe just two. But I guess it depends on how you categorize them, because one could go either way. Like, to me, it's obvious, yeah. But I'm also the one writing it, so.
Right. Yeah, I think you said it, you know, more succinctly than I did. It's, yeah, you got to trust your readers. You can't just mess with them too much, or else, yeah, they lose interest. And yeah, I think, you know, G.R. Martin did The Red Wedding. Like, everyone was absolutely 100% just aghast that
right.
plot twist happened. You know, there was no indicator. You know, we knew what one group of people was going to do, but we had no, we were like, no, didn't even cross anyone's mind. And that's, I think, how you do it well, is that it's not like a game where you're like, oh, look over here, and then this happens. But yeah. You know, it can be done really effectively and really well. And you know, he had a lot of politics at play, and he always does, but I think some people mistake like good writing and like good plotting with plot twists. Mm-hmm. Like, they try and throw too much in as a way to try and keep a plot very like fast moving and engaging, but they're yeah. actually throwing plot twists in there, and you're just kind of like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like,
yeah.
Okay. The challenges are great. You know, anything that really challenges your characters, of course, but if you have them every other chapter.
Yeah. I guess plot twists as a term is also kind of interesting, right? Because ultimately, your story is plotted that way. So when we yeah. call it a plot twist, it's like, well, that's just how the story happens. But it's right. more like a reader-oriented term, I guess. But yeah, sorry.
Or even when writing, like, I think the twist is a good word for it. It should shift the trajectory of the storyline,
yeah.
right? Like, it should completely, we're no longer on the path that we expected to be on. And even when plotting, like, there's a very clear line, at least for me, whenever I do mine, is that, like, this is when the tone, the goals, all of it shifts, because it's a wrench in the previously considered ebb and flow of the story. And I think maybe that's a mistake that some writers make, is that they don't realize that at least this is just my opinion. I could be wrong. I could probably get people being like, no, I don't think so, which is totally fine. But I think people think plot twist is just like a hiccup or a bump or like a something in the plot line, and then it's back to normal. And in my mind, I'm like, a plot twist should like completely shift, you know, the trajectory yeah. of the story itself,
right.
For it to be effective.
Yeah, it should definitely feel like a major shakeup, kind of like we yeah. talked about with character deaths, right? Like, it shouldn't just be,
yeah.
oh, this happened and we move on. Like, it should right. definitely have significant impact.
Right. Now I fully agree.
All right. Well, it's time for weekly writing resource. I think we both have one this week, which is a first in a while, because we usually yeah. alternate. But I will let you go ahead and share yours first.
Yeah, so I think I mentioned it earlier, and I know it's not in the doc, I'm sorry.
You're but okay.
It's not necessarily a resource, but I do think it can be a really useful tool to new writers. So we talked last time about reading bad books.
Yeah.
I got turned on, and it's a very like well-known website, but NetGalley, for those who don't know. And you can create a free account, and then you link especially if you're a reviewer, but you can link your social media accounts, and it is not guaranteed every time. I have been rejected plenty, but you can request to read an advanced copy of a book that stands out to you or from an author you know, or simply just like, oh, I'm going to just take that one. And if you are selected, you can then preemptively, obviously, read the advanced copy of the book. You often have to go to the publisher's page and read their fine print about what they do and do not want you to do for the review. But I find, after a discussion last week, that it's pretty fun if you want to dip your toe in without upsetting anybody you might know.
Yeah.
There's been talk in the past, you know, like, oh, I sent this review to a friend and then they never reviewed it because they didn't like it, or they did review it and it was a one star and I was upset. So if you want to dip your toe or have a foray into reviewing as a new reviewer or someone who wants to review more books and get more practice, it is a great website. they have all different types of genres. So it's not just fantasy, it's romance and literature and all this kind of stuff. I find it helpful to review books personally, because then I am engaging with the book more than just simply reading through it, which is still great. You know, I need my crappy Kindle Unlimited novels as much as I need, you know, highbrow fantasy. So, but, you know, if you're reviewing a book, it teaches you how to engage more deeply with what you are reading. And then surprisingly, that ends up happening with your own work. And then you go back and you're like, well, I didn't like that in this novel, but I'm about to do that in mine.
Yeah.
How do I either one, do it better, or two, maybe I should rethink it. So anyway, that galley, that's my resource for the week.
Yeah, I'm going to have to check that out and see what arcs are coming up that I can maybe get my hands on. But yeah, I also, I keep losing my train of thought. It's been that kind of day.
It's okay. But, no, I totally get it.
I agree on the reviewing books part. Even if you're not posting the reviews, which I've kind of stopped doing for now just because I don't feel like putting that much effort into it. But yeah. I do review them for myself, like just kind of making like a little note file of like, this is what I enjoyed. Oh, yeah. This is what I didn't. You know, this is what I think was executed well and what I think could have been improved on.
Yeah.
Just so I kind of have like a frame of reference for the things that I like and I don't, based on my reading experiences. And then I can make sure I'm kind of sticking to that in my writing as well.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Well, I'll share my resource. So I believe I've shared this one in the past, but I am going to cheat and share it again because it's constantly being updated. So I'm going to give them another shout out. This is indieauthorconnect.com. It's all one word. And I believe it's run by Atlas Creed, who's a self-published author here on TikTok. It's kind of similar to Readzy in some ways, where it's designed to be like a one-stop shop for authors, but it's like really geared towards indie authors. So there's going to be resources for like cover design, even web design, marketing, narrators, pretty much anything you can think of. And it's just a really well-designed website. As someone who works a day job in web design, I appreciate the intuitive user experience. So it is a nice resource for you guys. And it has a lot of cool things. They have a Discord server as well that you can join and connect with other authors and readers. So definitely check that out if you haven't already. Get immersed in the indie author community. And that's my resource for the week.
Excellent. I feel like it's okay if we repeat resources that we use frequently. Like every season, we bring back the tried and true resources for people who might not go back to season one.
Yeah, sometimes I'll pick an old one just to remind people or share with new listeners, because I know not everyone has listened to every episode, because we have quite a bit now. So
we do have quite a bit now.
I think this is 15. Yeah, this is 15. So coming along nicely. All right, well, that is gonna do it for Quill Inquiry this week. Ash, thank you so much as always for joining. I think we have one guest, but so we'll leave a window for like 2 minutes for them to ask questions or comments. But do you have any closing thoughts you'd like to share before we sign off?
No, just thanks for being a great host and getting stuff done and always being a tried and true listener. Life is strange and weird, but we're doing our best. I think I always say that at the end of every episode. I'm like, we're just doing what we can, and we are. And it's good to remind everybody that
that's okay.
Even if it's 15 words or 100 or 1,000, we'll get there.
Yeah. It's okay to repeat ourselves. I just repeat the same intro every week. So I feel like it's part of, you know, the expectation a little bit. It's just, you know, creates character for the show. But
yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's going to be it for me, Ash. Thank you so much as always.
Of course.
And I will see you on our next episode, whenever that is. I got to figure that out.
We will figure it out and let everybody know. Don't worry. All right. All right. Bye. See you later.